Welcome to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White. I'm Hardy White. Join me now, won't you, as we take a voyage together on the open seas of our imagination, defying expectation, freeing ourselves of the ordinary, the things that weigh us down. We're going to be truly free together. It's just like doing a yoga video in the morning, but it's a free your soul. It frees your soul up. You'll feel it. Oh, you'll feel it. Pirates. The very word strikes fear into those afraid of pirates. They dominated the seas in days of old, from the Mediterranean to the Atlantic to the Caribbean, to the west coast of South America, up by where they took the gold, what is that called? And then back to the Caribbean. Names such as the first pirate, Francis Drake, a duck on my grandfather's farm, and the notorious Arthur Treacher, also known as No Beard. These names also struck fear. And fear is gold if you're a pirate. Buried fear. If you can dig up those fears and sell them back to the kings and queens of various monarchies across the world, you are pirating. The daily life of a pirate was far from ordinary. It was extremely ordinary, which is very far from ordinary on a scale that is circular. Ordinary laps itself. Pirates would sleep all day because they had nothing to eat, like an old starved dog. And they would skate on their own vomit on the decks of ships that were in a constant state of disrepair. When they saw a merchant ship laden with gold, silver, more silver, crystal, spices, tobacco, and other products from the New World and the Old, they would be boarded, the crews dispatched, and the loot looted. These are pirates from the pirate times. Join me now as we explore those crazy, reckless, murderous, thieving, wonderful, romantic days of piracy and the pushback against it by the wealthy classes and the merchants. My ancestors could have cared less what was going on. And yours too, probably. Oh my goodness, it was another person's fight. A lot of us think maybe we could have been pirates because we currently work in a setting where we exploit people and take their things and everything. Oh my goodness, you're no pirate, are you? Some people call people who take media without asking pirates. I remember a friend of mine stole a comic book when he was 9. And he doesn't seem like a pirate to me. Now, he did stab another child with a sword. But that's going to happen. I blame the parents. If you let a child play with a sword, you say, here's a real saber. Why don't y'all go play pirate somewhere? That's not safe for you or the child. Oh, my goodness. We also romanticized things in the past that maybe weren't so wonderful. I remember as a child, my grandparents used to take me to this place in Florida, and it was called Six Gun Territory. Now you say, now that's all of Florida. But at the time, it was one of these places where they recreate the past. And this past was the Wild West that never existed. So it was one of those towns that you see in movies. See, I think I've seen this exact set in a Bonanza. Here it is, Gunsmoke. And they would recreate one of the many gunfights. That was the wonderful romantic thing about the Old West, is that you could not go to the dry goods store to buy a sack of corn without getting in the middle of a handgun fight. Over what? Well, a lot of times it was just a drunken brawl or gambling, the American pastime. And people get so angry, say, you had an ace up your sleeve, which is, I thought, a good thing. And boom, blam, blam. And so you actually shot matron, that was it called, was some lady, that the schoolmarm. They had a name, different names for them then. If I remember correctly from the Little Rascals, her name was Mrs. Crabtree. And school marm has to be short for something like Marmalite or school marm, Madam Marmalum, something. And they was caught in the crossfire. I don't remember if that happened at the six-gun territory. But then it would be actual stuntmen would fall off these roofs and something. As a young person, I thought, what's going on? And then the coroner would come measure them. Not the coroner, didn't care. Nobody cared. The funeral fella, the mortician, would come. That's putting a fancy word on something. Oh, yes. No, I'm not a dead burier guy. I'm a type of ishian, like a pediatrician, but for the dead. I'd love to be a doctor for the dead. They have those, though. I kid my pathologists. But it's wonderful, though. Never. I have a friend that does that, and he does. He's a MD, PhD, but occasionally he gets to cut open a head and take the brain, and he says he's never lost a patient because his people have donated their bodies to science and everything. I've tried to donate my body to everything but science because I think they've got enough people donating bodies. So I've gone through every single department at every single university, and the only ones that seemed half interested were the English departments. And I'm not exactly sure why. Philosophy said if I was more famous, they would take me, like a Jeremy Bentham sort of thing. But most of the departments said that human remains, they couldn't justify having them. It certainly wouldn't come out of their, you know. I said, well, they're being donated. And they go, yeah, but then there's storage costs. We got to put them somewhere. I thought, oh, that's a very good point. I'm actually burdening you. That's why they say to take care of it ahead of time. So if you plan, if you want your remains exhibited in public or at your old elementary school, you got to take care of that ahead of time. And I would love that. Children would, I think that middle school, they'd absolutely love it. Could you imagine if your school mascot was the mummified remains of a alumni? Not just any alumni. Somebody really, really identified with the school. I think that wouldn't be terrible. What if the school, here's the where it all ties together. The school's mascot's called the Pirates. That's why I was talking about that earlier. Oh, my goodness, there's all types of pirates. There's privateers, which are people that own franchises. Or there's pirates, and those are people whose sign looks very similar to a national chain. And there's a difference. We've had all sorts of comedies about pirates are like the popular Nazi comedies of the 60s and 70s, like Hogan's Heroes or one of those. Say, hey, yesterday's bad guys are today's comedy staple. So I don't know. We could dig deeper if our knowledge of history is better. See, we're really dooming. It's so bad for the entertainment industry. If our culture was a little more literate, they could really go deep for these ideas and everything, and we'd be having shows about stuff that most people don't read about. It's, you know, I don't know, like, I can't think of, oh my goodness, you get a good comedy set up, and then you can't think of an example. Well, maybe it's not funny. But I know that the British do that, so now I have an example. So they'll make fun about, like, oh, remember how funny, Elizabeth I was? And they'll have a whole TV show or something about her being silly and funny. Their ghosts is like that. You got to know a little bit of history and everything. And then when they brought it to the United States, they go, okay, it's got to just be, here's the things that the ghosts can be. One, Sonny Bono. I don't know if you can work that in, a native person. So I don't know. They can be a little more detailed maybe in other countries where they have books. Bob, oh my goodness, I'm just fine here. You know why? Because this week, I'm going to tell you something. I'll mix it all up. And you say, one minute you're talking about pirates, Hardy. And the next minute you're talking about cows. And that's because I've just been to the Kentucky State Fair, where there was a couple of controversies. One of them was that in the miniature category, this person had a exhibit, little, he made a little miniature room, and it said casting couch. And I guess there was a butt print on the couch, and so it was really supposed to be a porn casting couch. I don't know how that they figured that out. But then they took it out of there because it was controversial. But they left all the little miniature fishing house or the Harry Potter village one. Harry Potter wand shop was one of them. I guess that's not controversial. Depends who you are. But a lot of other things. Look at that. Looks like just like kittens playing under tiny mushrooms. And another controversy was one of the top first prize cake winners was Aunt B. No. Was a person who lived in Ohio and not Kentucky. So it's not the Ohio State Fair. It's the Kentucky State Fair. So that was a problem. A lot of those cakes were something else. Boy, I went through that exhibit. I've never seen anything like that. Oh, not only did they have these beautiful cakes that looked like cakes, they had these ones made out of what they call marzipan. I know what marzipan is. And they're almost like sculptures. And that's the stuff they use when they fake people out. Say, is that cake or not cake? And you got to eat it. They have, is it a shoe? And you got to take a bite of it. And maybe it's cake, maybe it's a shoe. But they do that with all sorts of things. I remember one time they had this child, and she had her father was away in the army, and she hadn't seen him in so long, a little school child, and she was playing in the gym, and they say, "Hey, honey, look who's here!" And she turns around, and it's her daddy. Come home from he's in his fatigues, and she goes up and she hugs him, and he's cake. He's cake though, so it's mixed for her. Because that's a little bit good, and a little, that's what they call bittersweet. And then it turns out it's a carrot cake. So I think she might have wept. But that's the kind in the marzipan category. That's what they had. So realistic. They had, what else they have? Plants. I'm going to get to the animals. That'll break my heart. It will and then won't. Because they were all alive. So for now, they're fine. And I'll explain that there was nothing between corn dog and live pig. There was no evidence. I know that you can connect the dots in your head, but we're just going to pretend, and we're all out there just for a little bit of fun and just to varnish the truth. There was a knitting exhibit. You saw everything that people had knitted. Everything's a competition at the state fair. I know you think, well, not everything has to be a competition, but it does here. So whether you can cook it, make it, there was walking sticks, you know, those kind of whittled, take a lifetime to whittle, and then you get judged, things like that. There was cows. Now, one building went in, it was just cows. And I don't know, you say, well, I've been on farms before. I've seen cows from a distance quite regularly, even, maybe. And I've been near some. I was not prepared for the enormity of some of these absolute, I guess the technical term is unit. And these things were big, just, I don't know, you could get several, many, many people in them. I don't know why you would want to, but you could. It's just like it had more, if you were to take out the insides of the cow, bless the heart, eventually people get to die. It'd be like a tiny home. You could live in it. But they're, gosh, my goodness. And they were marching. And different breeds, you know, there's not just one kind of cow. There's all sorts of kind of cows. Some of them look like sheep. And they were. But a lot of the cows, too, their little bovine physiognomy changes from one to another, and their size has changed. Some of them are many. I don't know whether they measure them in hands or by hands they mean farm hands. Well, that's two. I think that's two Tonys high. Tony's about this high. That's a Tony and a half. The scope is like, if anybody says you want to buy a cow, don't. Joe Penner used to say, who's Joe Penner? You know what I think about when I watch, you'll watch like an old Simpsons from the 90s or something, and you'll see Aerosmith. And you go, there's old, dang old Aerosmith on that cartoon. And that's what people in the 30s thought when they saw Joe Penner in a Warner Brothers cartoon. Remember, sometimes they'd be like, here's Frank Sinatra when he's 18. Here's Joe Penner. And you're watching that as a child thinking, I don't know who any of these people are. You get older, you learn some of them. You go, I bet that might be Katharine Hepburn or something. But it's Joe Penner. That one you never, man, I would say 0.1% of the people get to the point. They go, oh, now I know who that is. That's the one, do you want to buy a duck guy? So his whole thing, I've gone on the air. I think they don't, I want to be associated with him, which is why I've mentioned him many, many times and keep trying to educate the public. Oh my gosh. If you're a fan of someone, you need to tell the public about it and just keep mentioning their names, like Joe Penner or Elmo Hope. And then maybe they'll seek them out. You know, we live in a day and age, not just a day, but a day and age when you can go online and you can say, I want to see an episode of The Goodies. I don't know why you would, but you can. And then the past is not lost like that. I remember when I have a time machine, so I was curious what I went back to after the Library of Alexandria was destroyed, and I did some man on the street stuff. And a lot of people were like, I wasn't going to read half of that. Half of the stuff I wasn't even in a language I knew. And then you can't believe how much stuff was just filler. For instance, every graduate student in Mesopotamia. Am I getting that right? I'm trying to make academic jokes, but I've dropped out of school so many times. Basically, I quit school at the end of every school day. I'd be like, that's it. And I eventually followed through, but I was like, this is it. So when you quit every day, you don't do your homework either. So that's a bad plan or a good plan. You know? Oh, what if I had done my homework? I might be something, I might be a doctor or a space person doing something in space and with my hands, but lucratively. I do things with my hands now, but I don't always get paid for them. In fact, you get to a point where you got to pay other people if you really want to do your thing. And this goes for, that's nothing salacious. I mean, that could be just, you know, art. So please, I'm begging you. Please take my, I'll pay you to take my paintings. Oh, all right. That'd be nice if you could bribe, if you could get rich being paid by artists to take their paintings. And then once you have all that money, give it back to the artist because now you're wealthy. I don't know if that works. That might not work. But I come up with, oh my gosh, I'm full of ideas, but I got to get them out. Get them out by the beginning of the day because I've rented the space to other people. That's what a job is sometimes too. So I love my mind, but it's not, I've had to rent it out to pay the bills. And so it's not my own. It's like having a house and you go, uh-oh, I got to take in boarders. And the boarders in this case are the goals of other people and other organizations that might not have your best interest in mind, but they really do need your soul, for some reason, to complete the task. Never fully understood that. And I've never not really wanted a job, but almost every job I've had, I thought, is this even necessary? I could talk my superiors out of this position. Because now that I've been in it, I go, this is pointless. You don't need me to do this. My goodness, you don't have nieces and nephews or something? This is a volunteer job. Now I have a steady volunteer job. Did you ever have a volunteer job that gave you diarrhea? Oh, I'm not supposed to say anything scatological because Dale reminded me I'm on at dinner time now. But I'll tell you what, I've been on the radio for a long time. I never came on to make toilet jokes or anything. But the parallel between a lot of things and bodily functions is undeniable. And it's just presented itself to me as I've begun to think deeply. You think deeply and you get to the bowels of things, right? We all say that and use that as an expression. So that's why I mention those things. It's not to gross anybody out. In fact, it's not very high on the gross out scale anymore, given what we're exposed to a lot of times. Oh my goodness. I feel like we're right on the brink of there being actual scat flinging involved in some sort of political ritual. I don't know whether it'll be part of formal debates or not, but that would be all worked out ahead of time. How much poo, what poo size, and you fling it. And happens now metaphorically. Or maybe we could just talk about it or animate it. That's the thing with CGI, just have that. Say every time that somebody scores a good rhetorical point, then they on CGI, they make it look like you've been hit with dung. Again, I realize, you know, because it's the dinner hour, I've been talking about piracy. I've been talking about cows. I didn't even mention the odor. I think it's wonderful and natural. And the sheep and the goats. The freaky thing about the goats and the sheep is I have a college friend, and he would make this sound sometimes when he was like, I don't know, whether he was disappointed or something, go, yeah. Say, yeah, like that. Go, yeah, yeah. Well, I walked into this building at the fair, and it was like there was every size him going, yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah, like that. And it's freaky. And I think there's an animal that has lips, I bet. It sounds like that. And that was disconcerting to me. Also, when pigs scream like that, boy, that's just been used in so many movies and everything, that frequency. Oh, my goodness. So screaming pigs and the blasé, whatever they are, sheep or goats, and cattle, they low. They low. I can't low like a cow lows. We would say in our language, in English, we say a cow goes moo. And like in another, and there's a European language, a cow goes like shibbidi-boop-bop, shibbidi-bom, something like that. It doesn't even sound like close to moo, nyan. That's what a cow does. I mean, a cat does. I don't know. I lost my see and say. Boy, you think you don't need to hang on to that. It's like when you toss those encyclopedias. You go, I got this. And you throw the encyclopedias out and you go, oh, what are the five head shapes of the six world races or something like that? And you wish you had your 30s encyclopedia. But it's like that with the see and say. I go, what is that animal called? And I don't, what's its thing that it says? What do we call that? Catchphrase. What's its catchphrase? And say, you know, and they'll suggest ones. You know, the chicken goes, cluck, cluck. That's not close. Some of them are accurate onomatopoeia. Others, not so much. And I'm not sure why that is. But onomatopoeia is hard because a lot of times people have trouble phonetically writing something out. Did you ever see something like my friend Bubby Child does this actually, and also whoever wrote Andy Capp, who is not a friend of mine, but when they do the transliteration of an accent, and so the words are spelled, you know, weird, but if you say it kind of phonetically, then you can suddenly pronounce it in that accent, right? You know, war, or something. I don't know what I'm saying. But, you know, there you go. Andy Capp, funny stuff, right? Oh, bro, he's I don't know, it's supposed to be Yorkshire or something. I don't even know where. Brummy. I don't know my England's. I don't know American accents. My goodness. How am I supposed to know? People are from all over, you know? I would say the only accent I can tell is somebody who was in the Army, like they were an Army brat or something, moved around a lot, because they have a very, very distinctive accent. And you can always tell, because they'll say stuff like, I was an Army brat and I moved around a lot, like that. And you can hear it. I can hear it. Other people, not so much. I don't always know where they're from and things like that. And some people are running from the law, so they've changed the way they speak. And there's nothing wrong with that. There was that fella in England that was wanted in the United States. He goes, oh, you have it all wrong, chaps. My name is actually Reginald President, you know, Davenport or something. And it wasn't. You know, he's just doing a voice. And it's so funny, like, people from there can tell when you aren't from there. So people have that play. You can't, it's hard to fake. You know, I'm one of you blokes, I like to say when I go to England. I'm just an ordinary cove, like yous, yunzins, yinzizes. So this is like, I'm from Pittsburgh's wife, sound like that. I'm not. Oh, my goodness. Guess where I'm from? I moved around a lot. My parents were in the mafia. No, not really. They just cooked for them, and so they had to follow them. No, that's not true. They were running from the army. And so they moved a lot. I don't know why they moved a lot. Couldn't pay the rent or something. I always thought, I don't think it was anything very special. Oh, my goodness. I'm glad we're together today. And I'm glad that I can give you as much information as one of those pirate documentaries where they take you right through everything and have, and a lot of times they're not completely accurate. I watched one on Grace O'Malley, the Irish pirates. I go, that sounds made up. Well, the part that seemed made up is when she goes to Cheers and then the cast of Cheers, because I was thinking that's an anachronism. Because I was doing the math, and I was thinking, she's in the, like, what is that, mid-late 16th century. That's 15-something. And Cheers, is that 80s? 80s? You know, 1980s. So I don't see how an Irish pirate back then. Also, something I learned is that, so she would take tolls. So if you wanted to go up and down the coast of Ireland, you had to bribe an Irishman. I think it's still that way. But now you can use anything, Bitcoin or money. But then it was cows. And now that I've said, they must be tiny, slender Irish cows that you can put in your pocket, like maybe like porta cows, because there's no way that those big Kentucky cattle that I saw out there at the Kentucky State Fair that were the size of a Mini Cooper. No, bigger than that. Bigger than that. What would they, I'm trying to think of something that's the size. Can you think of something, Hardy? I'm trying to think of something. Giant bloody cow is what it, what is that size? You know how they say that the world's fattest man was buried in a piano case? Actually, he was buried in a coffin the size of a piano case, is my understanding. A piano case has a lot of stuff that a coffin doesn't need, probably. And this fella had no lid or anything like that. But it may be that kind of size something. Gosh, it's hard to... The tank of a big... tank of something, a big tank of something that someone says, don't smoke next to that big tank of a thing. And you go, that's the size of a large cow. And you go, yep. You don't want to ignite either one because the cows are filled with methane, which is something that I thought about while I was there. I was thinking, there's a lot of, did you ever walk into like one of those wards where a lot of old people are on oxygen and you're smoking a cigarette and you think, I don't know, this is good. Well, that's the way I felt with the cattle with the, it was so hot out and there was so much methane. I thought, is this going to be some sort of rural Hindenburg? Is this going to, are the cows going to emanate something? And somebody, a spark from one of their little camper generators here that they're using to watch the news on while they're babysitting their cows, because all the farmers stuff have to wait there with their cows are in stalls, right? And they got to just sit there with it. It's just like if a family member's sick and you go, I have to, do they even know I'm there at the hospital? Can I just duck out? Can the nurse just call when they're conscious? But no, you got to be there with your patient or your cow the whole time. And I'm thinking, but what if everything blows up? Then what? And I didn't really think that. I'm just thinking it now, which is good. A lot of my fears are after the fact. Thank goodness. I need to tell you about this. There was a big statue, the kind that you might see like in an episode of Pee Wee or something. He was sitting there and he was called Farm Bureau Freddy. And I called him Fab Farm Freddy. And he's this big, it looked like a cowboy or something with a blue, that's an insurance company. I think I'm not touting them. I'm just saying they had their, I don't know why they have a giant person there, like a giant statue, but people were getting their pictures made in front of it. But then as they did, there'd be a voice come out and say, I say to that, how you got your picture made looking good? Because there was a fella on a microphone, and you don't know where he is, so he can see you, you can't see him. And he's being all clever up there. So they'd stand in front of that Fab Farm Freddy, and he'd say, you're looking good, you might move over to the right a bit, didn't you? Like that. And I loved it. It was fun. So many different types of people there, all from all over the state of Kentucky, and probably, because it was near Louisville, it was probably people from Ohio even, or Missouri. No, probably not. But all over Kentucky, and they were there with their sheep and their cakes, and their sheep cakes, and cakes that look like sheep, all sorts of things. I loved it, and I love things like that where you get to see people that you would never, ever, ever see, ever, ever anywhere. And there are, we live with folks that we don't even see at shopping places. You know, there are beautiful humans that you reside in proximity to who you never see or interact with because you go to different stuff. You might have different churches or houses of worship or none at all. You might go to different cons. They might go to Comic-Con and you go to Omnicon, which is Decepticon or one of those, which is a different product. And you don't run into one another. Or different restaurants. So I like only certain types of pizza. So I don't like pizza like, I don't like that kind of pizza. So you don't go that place. So you'll never see them. But the fair. Oh, the state fair. There is no place that is more egalitarian. The wonderful thing was the parking lot was vast. So it was at one of these fairground things that's all convention. It's for this type of thing, right? So the parking lot was Disney-esque, and it's got, poles with the number and the letter and everything. And then they had shuttles, which were little carriages where you sit on benches, and they're pulled by John Deere tractors. So there'd be a fella, rustic fella, on a John Deere tractor, and there'd be somebody in the car going, "Big, watch your step," like that. And one lady was even trying to give a little tour, you know.
On your left here is a fun park.
And they take you to your car, and that's part of it too. You circumnavigate the parking lot in this wonderful little vehicle. And then we actually got in a traffic jam where we could have stepped out and just walked to it, but everybody stayed put. It was funny until we got to the actual drop-off. Maybe safety. We had to stop for horses. Oh, so many horses, too, all types of fancy ones. The horse stalls were all made to look like New York City brunch places or something. And I know that's, I don't know what I'm talking about, but they had tents. And they just look like chandelier. It looked like you'd have, you know, a mimosa outside and some kind of reimagined Eggs Benedict. But it was a horse stall. And then the, you know, the kind of fancy horses that they're, even their mane's braided, and they're also, they're psychotic, and their ankles are the size of pencils or something. They were there, all sorts. It was beautiful. Any kind of horses. Oh, there's also there's a lazy kind of horse that just sits around, and just a fun. They're called fun horses. They had those. They might have had draft horses. Those are even larger than the cows I mentioned. One time I was on Mackinac Island. You ever been to Mackinac Island? I was standing in front of the Grand Hotel on Mackinac Island, and they got carriages pulled by these draft horses. And by draft horses, I mean the ones that look like they're drafted by the draft beer place, Budweiser. And you've seen those, right? At parades, they bring them out to fraternity parties and everything. And they are the size of many, many horses. And that's the model for the Trojan horse, because they hollowed one out and people got in them. It was a rural horse. You know, why the odor? Or the wrong, you know, it's not traditional horse odor. Whatever. Let us in. Those big things, they weigh, I don't know, maybe let's say a ton. Well, one time I was talking to this a person who works there, and they said one time one of these horses dropped dead right in front of the hotel. A draft horse. It dropped dead, which is sad. No one wants that. But it had some sort of massive heart attack, like your Uncle Gene after Thanksgiving, and just boom, and down he goes. And you've got this corpse that needs heavy machinery on an island that has no cars. So that's interesting. I forgot how he told me they did it. But I think maybe they do have, like, maybe they got, like, a crane just in case for emergencies. But there's no, on Mackinac Island, there's no, it's all horse-drawn, everything. There's no vehicles. So it's a great place to bike through poo. And they also make fudge. The real kind of fudge. So when you get to Mackinac Island, there's two things you smell immediately. One is the traditional chocolatey fudge. And the other is that you smell that there's no cars. And that's if you put those two together, your brain doesn't know what to do. It's like, this seems like this seems like a fragrance Bronwyn would like, you know, but it's challenging. Can make it up, sell it to Tom Ford, and it's going to be, I don't know, I'm not even going to guess what he'd call it. I know it would have a curse word in it. Oh, I blessed, are you blessing me? No, you are by listening, if you've listened this far. Oh my goodness. But this isn't like what if it was like YouTube, where the longer you listen, I get 5 cents for every 10 hours that you listen. That'd be amazing, but radio doesn't work that way. No no loss or anything. You could tune out now. You don't have to keep going, because it could get, what if it gets more profound from now on, though? What if I take the state fair and pirates and the third thing I talked about, which will come to me in a minute, and then I put them all better. I do a massive callback, blah, 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 line them all up, and you see that I've been talking about a certain thing all along. And that's your reward at the end. You say, Hardy, I hadn't really thought about that. You know, that's the thing about thinking something. Do you ever have wonderful, inspiring conversations? Do you ever have wonderful, Leonard, I'm sorry. Do you ever have a wonderful, inspiring conversation with a friend? And it really does inspire you to maybe do something or do a project or get something going, you know, to dream, to have a vision, to make it more than just a fantasy. I was listening to, these names are for young ones, they won't know who these people are, but the remaining Beastie Boys was on the Conan, and he has the podcast on computer. And he was talking to them, and they were saying their late friend Adam was sort of an initiator, that he was that kind of person that if your group of friends was around talking about something you wanted to do, he was the person who showed up the next day with the equipment to do it. And I thought, oh, that's like Butchie, when you just like, you're messing around talking about robbing the bank, and the next day he will be at your doorstep with pitchforks and masks and everything, or whatever it takes. I don't know what the plan was. There's two ways to rob a bank: force, or you dig in from the bakery next door that turns out, you know, a friend of your uncle's friend owns. So maybe Butchie gets a job there, and then he gets the key, and then in the middle of the night, we pull the oven away, start digging through the wall, and the other side's the vault. He's the type of person that would follow through with all that. You know, most of us just go, oh, it was all talk. We're never going to make our movie. And says, you know, we're making it. We're doing it. I've got the tickets right now to Turkey. And I go, oh, I didn't really want to... I want to be that for you sometimes. I want to be an instigator. I want to be a motivator. I want to inspire you. And that means to breathe in, spire, spiro, breath, soul, spirit, spa, ha. Breathing is spirit. Control your breathing, control your spirit. That's how it works. But I want to use this air. I use it for a couple things. I'd love to be able to use it for music. My singing is, it's borderline wretched. It's good enough to sing like a code, like if there was a musical lock where you'd had to go, let me in right now. And be like, okay, close enough. But it's not good enough to really entertain people. Unless it's a talk, I guess there's a musicality. I switched to being a drummer, basically, with my mouth. And now I just don't... I'm concerned about note duration, but not pitch. That's me talking. I think about what I'm saying and how it sounds. Yes, I do. Well, you certainly think about dynamics. Thank you. Thank you. I'm glad that you noticed, because I think that is important. My goodness. And it also depends how you're listening to the show. I wonder. Sometimes if you do have something in your ear, then I'm going into ASMR range here, when I don't want to quite do that, because I feel like you can, like there's little, you know, did you ever see that toothpaste ad and the stuff that gives your tartar or something on your teeth or rots them are actually little creatures with pickaxes, just like Butchie brought when I discussed the bank robbery. And I'm afraid that if I get close enough, you can hear that. You know, I remember being moved to pretty much to retching and gagging listening to Garrison Keillor, because I thought, that's a lot of spit. And you can hear it. He was just, I don't know how, he was talking up on the microphone real close or something. And just, that's my recollection of him. Just everything sounding like okra sap right up on that mic. I mean, some people love that, you know. But I almost prefer the old days where it was, you know, I'm standing here having to yell because the microphone is of poor quality. But now, you know, they're so sensitive and everything. At first, when I started the show, I thought, I'm going to just put a contact mic on my incisors and just do it like that. How would that sound? I wonder if it's like tone. It's like, you know, I'm going to have the equivalent of a bridge pickup. Maybe I just have mics all over my body. So you're different. I've got my stomach mic'd for no reason. But if there's a certain resonance that may happen, if I have, this is with the belly mic turned up. In a world. See, isn't that different? And you could have an internal one. I've swallowed a microphone to see how that works. It's all sorts of things. You know, if you've ever worked with an audiophile, my goodness. They can hear things we can't. They're like super tasters or those kind of artists that see colors that aren't there. That kind of thing. Well, not me. I've always been really lo-fi. And I believe it's because my senses are diminished from using them. And goodness, I've used them. I've worn out my eyes looking at beautiful things. I've worn out my ears listening to beautiful sounds. I've worn out my taste buds eating delicious food. I've worn out my fingertips by constantly slapping a hard marble table and screaming. And the reason for that is because, hey, You've got to live while you're alive. You can't take any of this with you. Your nervous system is to be experienced. Oh, my goodness. Is it? Well, you don't have a choice. There's the rub. Is the thing that makes you feel great, makes you feel lousy. It's the same set of things, same weird, stringy biofibers. It's a strange thing to be alive. Oh, my goodness, I know what it's like to be a creature. And sometimes it's blissful. It's like being in a dream. And other times it's like being in a nightmare. Sometimes it's inexplicably painful. Sometimes it's wonderfully joyful. And a lot of times it's just vacillates between both, or it's all both of them mixed up. Like whatever the two things are in Spotted Dick. I saw a jar of that in the England section in the grocery store. They got an England section at Meijer. And it's got all these things that you don't need. Oh, that's a jar of Spotted Dick. I wonder what that I need that for. I don't think I do. But I always want you always want to buy something with a name that doesn't translate well. And I think the company Bimbo knew that when they started. Say, we're going to go ahead and just name our international bakery company Bimbo. And we don't care. And people are going to buy like a bag of snacks because it has that name on it. They go, well, they don't know, but we do. We should do that. People do that all the time. Pretend fake naivete. Oh, my gosh. I've been guilty. Oh, I think I'm guilty of it sometimes. I don't want to take responsibility for my cynicism sometimes. And I go, oh, just let everybody think you're naive or something. And I am, I suppose. But my goodness, I also get disappointed and I get cynical sometimes. What does cynical mean? Well, let's break it down. Cynical. What did the cynics think? Well, I'll tell you what it means now, because that's what makes more sense. Well, now it means that you sort of think everybody's motivated by personal reasons or for gain or something like that, kind of thinking the worst, that people aren't going to be selfless, they're being selfish, and everybody's out for themselves. And I think they are and they aren't. I think you can be selfish and not out for yourself. What? I don't know what I'm talking about. I don't think it's that easy. Oh, my goodness. All mixed up. Sometimes we are self. Don't be so hard on yourself. Be harder on yourself. You are often cynical, but then the other times you are naive, or you're charitable, or you're full of compassion, or you're optimistic, or you're positive. But then sometimes you're dark, or you're angry, or you're bitter. Does that sound about right? It's like you're reading my mind. Oh, that's because we've been given a very, very similar brain. And then we're living in a very, very similar environment, hearing very, very similar information. So very, very similar that I can make references and jokes about things that you will know and that I have no way of knowing you would know. The only way I know that you will know that I know you know is because I'm sure that we're all hearing the same stuff. That you've seen the same TV shows, that you've read some of the same books, that you've seen the same things in the papers and at the movies that I have, that you've heard the same songs. There you go. That's how we can communicate there. But many of us have never met. Have we? Have I ever met? Have we ever met?
No.
Some of you are going,
yes, of course. Yes, I'm your mother.
I know, Mom. I met you, Mom. But I don't know if my mother still listens to the show. I think she's got confused about where it is now. She used to listen to it differently. I'm going to talk about my mother then. No, I'm not going to do that. I will say this, that even though I don't know you, I feel like I do, and it's easy to give you the benefit of the doubt because I want to give it to myself too. Oh, gosh. I could go on about lots of stuff, but I know that in my heart that one of the things that I have to say when I have this microphone here is something that will heal hearts, or something that I've always wanted to hear. Why wouldn't I? Maybe it's something I need to hear as well. And I feel that way because I'm a sort of a pirate. I'm sailing out on this ocean that you're sailing on, but I feel like I have no real alliances anymore. Allegiances? Alliances? Anymore. That I'm adrift. That I'm like you, a driven leaf. And I come upon a boat, let's say, and it has more riches than I. And I am confronted with a moral dilemma. How do I treat those on board? Where's the line between my self-preservation and my obligation to others? And so I board your ship. And the first thing I say to you is, do you like cake? And you go, are you a pirate? I go, answer my question. Now, the reason I do it that way is because I'm employing a certain technique that early pirates did not use. It is a technique akin to Dada. And that is this, that I'm going to come upon your vessel, you, your background, your memories, the way you see yourself, and I, Hardy White, will sail up in a vessel that seems to you that it's similar. Hey, this fella's like me. Hey, this fella's like my uncle. Hey, this fella's like that neighbor that won't take a hint. And I come up on you like that, disguised. And then you say, all right, come on over. Then once I'm on your vessel, I want to confuse you. I want all of those expectations to fall away. I want you to say, this isn't what I expected at all. In fact, the closer I look, the less informed I am. I don't know if this is a pirate. I don't know if this is a cow. I don't know if this is a farmer. I don't know what I'm listening to. I don't know where I am. And it is in that state of disorientation that you will achieve awareness. You must cast away all the expectations. The ship must disappear. I must disappear. The ocean itself must disappear, and all will be revealed to you. Once you stop expecting things, once you have been disabused of your sense of order, once you have stopped trying to take all your memories and put them together like they're puzzle pieces, it's a kaleidoscope. And the memories, when they're assembled, are abstract. And they give a feeling, not a message. And I'm here to complete that feeling for you. I want you to participate in that feeling. I want you to be able to be in that sea, that ocean, the one that doesn't consume you, the one that is you. Oh, my friends, I want you to be embraced, ultimately. That feeling, at least. Right? Because things are hard, things are tough, and we're going to get through them by being bizarre. That's the only method I can. Everything else seems like it's insufficient. Oh, I have tried all sorts of systems. I have been to many churches, many houses of worships. I've been to temples and temples, bumples, churches, chimpachoms, and everything, meeting houses. I've been to those rooms that hotels that you can rent out to have some kind of convention in to make them look like they're official, but it's really maybe it's timeshares or some kind of fringe group. That, been there, looking for the answers in all sorts of places. Solitary, mystical immersion in artistic expression. I've looked far and wide over all the many oceans of the sea and the earth and all. In every land, and I've come to this conclusion that I should probably start all over again because I wasn't paying attention, or I don't think I probably missed something. But my point is this. There is no end. It's a vast sea. It keeps going around. It's the going around that's the point. You're going to find things. You're going to lose them again. I found myself. Then you lose yourself again. And if you haven't, do it on purpose so you'll have something to look for. All right. Isn't that the way it is? It's like when you find a thing in a game, you say, put it back again, we'll start over looking for it again. Finish the puzzle, take it apart, put it back together again. Oh, I can't believe that we get to be together like this. First of all, that's a miracle to me. And that it's the actual radio is just freaky, right? Because I could see on the internet, you know, I was messing around. I was on, you came to me on one of those YouTube shorts things. I was looking at it, and one of them was an AI of a monkey discovering gold. And then it was you, and then it was something else again. I think a plane crashing. Oh, okay, great. But that's how I discovered you. But that's not it with radio. Sometimes it's driving. I was driving through New York City, and I heard your voice. Yeah? Yes. And what did I say? Something interesting. Oh, I'm sorry. That wasn't me. That was probably not me. But I bless you. I'm glad that you are listening now, because the chance that I will say something interesting is always there. That's always a possibility. Probability? Meh. Who knows? But there's always a possibility you're going to learn something or feel something new listening to this show. Is it conventional? No. Is it like other ones? No. Yes and no. Does it ask questions? Yes. Does it answer them? Yes? I don't think so. And if we're looking for answers, we're just going to throw them back like fish. I'm not eating any of the answers we pull out of this pond. They're going right back in because it's really the catching them that I'm interested in. I can eat anything. But wonderful ideas or insights, I want those to go back and have little babies. And I'm not going to eat their eggs either. Don't eat caviar made from notions, made from connections. Don't eat the seed corn of your future enlightened breakthroughs.
All right.
Just saying. Oh, my friends, that brings us right up here to about the ending of the show where they like me to identify it. That's the only thing they actually say who it is at the end. Okay. Say what, then tell, now tell them what station it is. Otherwise, if they tell them at the beginning, they could report you. Listen, I'll tell you what you're listening to. I'm not afraid. It's Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County and New York City, New York, and worldwide on WFMU.org, the internet, bringing you Freeform Radio, the way it was read, formless and with form, with and without form, just like some religious entity. Oh, I love you so much. Thank you for joining me. We are like a family in that that's essentially meaningless. All human beings are a family. Doesn't mean anything. Your biological family. They're one of many sets of people that you can have mutually beneficial relationships with and cooperative relationships. But your biological family, God, everybody's really that. And sometimes, my goodness, you might not have the best. A lot of people don't. That's why I'm offering up myself to be your family member, cousin. You can be at any age, you can be a cousin. I could be first, second, third. I could be removed. I'm removed, often removed. Sometimes I remove myself. Can I hear a second? Yeah, second cousin. I was once removed. So was I. I'll explain what that. Do you know what that means? So your first cousin is your uncle or aunt's children. Your first cousin once removed are your parents' first cousins. Your second cousins are your first cousin's children.
Okay.
You understand?
I think I do now.
But your children's first cousin once removed are your first. No, now you're making it harder than it has to be. Oh, I like doing that. Oh, again, friends, thank you so much for joining me, and I will see you again next week.
Twins' name was Ebony. Her name was Mahogany. 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 Twins' name was Ebony.
through my hair. You tell me you love me. You act like everything between us is alright, girl. But you know.